Can Champagne, the Aware demo. So I'm not quite sure what the status of that is.
Check the Peace Discuss list. And, if you're driving around and you want to stop by or you want to just blow your horn at the stalwart.
And if nobody's there, blow your horn anyway.
Thanks for listening. Here's Labor Hour, and I guess Dave's not here. I hope he's doing something productive. I'm sure he is. My name's Paul Muth. That was David Green. Again, write us at newsfromneptune@gmail.com.
Yes.
That'll work. Thank you.
folks, and welcome to the December 4th, 2010 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT, Champaign, 90.1 FM, on the radio, and also webcast worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed in this hour of programming are those of the speaker and do not reflect the views and opinions of WEFT's management or board of directors. Here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you by you, the listeners of WEFT, and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour, a democratic union that BMWE celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
I like that Canadian-style health insurance and guaranteed year-round work.
Got that right.
Yeah.
At least they have health insurance.
You got that right. I'm your host, Bob Polesny, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us. And later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's brand-new poem for this week is entitled Banker's Tricks, and you'll hear it here first on WEFT. Also here with us today, our co-host Jason Kozlowski, and Bill Gorell, one of the original founders of the Labor Hour. Now here's Tom to kick off this week's Workers' Interest News.
According to reports from the United Way of Champaign County, a conglomerate of local unions is going to be feeding a lot of families this holiday season who would otherwise not be enjoying the holiday dinners they deserve. Working together on the holiday food distribution are the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 3700 at the U of I, the AFL-CIO Central Labor Council, the East Central Illinois Building and Construction Trades Group, the U of I Graduate Employees Organization, United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters, Local 149, and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 601. Mobile food pantries will be making stops in four of Champaign County's communities on the first three Saturdays of December. Each mobile pantry will have supplies to feed up to 150 families with food from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and the menu will include canned meat, vegetables and fruit, prepackaged tuna dinners, macaroni and cheese, cookies, peanut butter, and fresh produce if it is available. The first stop is at the United Methodist Church at 200 South Century Boulevard in Rantoul, and the giveaway started today, December 4th at 10 o'clock a.m. The second stop will be at the Mahomet Methodist Church at 1302 East South Mahomet Road, and is also occurring today, with the distribution beginning at 12:30 p.m. The third stop will be at the Stratton Elementary School at 902 North Randolph Street in Champaign, where distribution will begin at 10 o'clock a.m. on December 11th, next Saturday. The final stop will be on December 18th at the Prairie Elementary School at 2102 East Washington Street in Urbana, and distribution will begin at 10 o'clock a.m. The labor community will staff the distributions, but volunteers are welcome as well. If you're interested in participating, call the United Way of Champaign County at 352-5151. That's 352-5151. Jason?
Proud to be a member of GEO that's contributing to that as well. Please do what you can in these difficult times for people. 16 Cambodian factories producing clothing for big brands such as Adidas, AG, and Gap Incorporated have dismissed nearly 800 employees for taking part in a nationwide strike, a union leader said on Friday. Unions were preparing to issue demands to the factories to reinstate the 799 sacked workers by December 15th or face legal action and possibly more strikes, which would further disrupt a sector that is a big currency earner for the impoverished country. The union said the factories that dismissed the workers produce clothing for major Western companies, including Marks and Spencer Group, PLC, Tesco PLC, AB, Puma, and others, the world's biggest clothing retailer and owner of Zara. Those sacked were among the estimated 210,000 Cambodian garment workers, about two-thirds of the sector's workforce, from 95 factories who took part in a September strike to demand better working conditions and a wage increase to $93 a month from its current level of $56 a month. The strike was halted after 3 days when the government agreed to hold more talks to avoid damage to the industry, which is Cambodia's third largest foreign currency earner after agriculture and tourism. Bob?
Okay. Spain's military took control of the nation's airspace on Friday night after air traffic controllers staged a massive walkout that stranded at least 330,000 travelers on the eve of a long holiday weekend, forcing the government to shut down Madrid's big international hub and seven other airports. About 6 hours after the walkout started, causing total travel chaos, Deputy Prime Minister Alfredo Perez Rubalcaba, announced that the Defense Ministry had taken control of air traffic in all the national territory. He said the Army would make all decisions on the air traffic control, organization, planning, and supervision. If enough controllers do not show up for work on Saturday to restore normal flight operations, the government will declare a national emergency that would force them to do so. No-show controllers will face unspecified criminal charges punishable by serious prison time, the minister replied. The controllers abandoned their posts amid a lengthy dispute over working conditions and after the administration of Prime Minister Jose Luis Rodriguez Zapatero on Friday approved a package of austerity measures, including a move to partially privatize airports and hand over management to Madrid and Barcelona airports to the private sector. Angry passengers waited in huge lines for hours until giving up when it became clear their flights would not depart. Air traffic controllers meeting to plot a strategy at a hotel near Madrid's airport were heckled and filmed by stranded passengers as the controllers entered. Spain's air traffic controllers have been in bitter negotiations for over a year with the state-owned AENA, their airport authority, over wages, working conditions, and privileges. The dispute intensified in February after the government restricted overtime, cutting the average annual pay of controllers from about 350,000 euros to around 200,000 euros. That's a little bit of money there. Anyway, Tom?
Hey, this from the Associated Press. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill on Thursday to extend middle-class tax cuts while allowing those for the wealthy to expire, even while talks continued on extending them for everybody. The House bill was a political maneuver to satisfy Democratic lawmakers' supporters who are opposing the extension of tax cuts for the wealthy. Unfortunately, many feel that the bill has no chance in the Senate, where the Democrats need Republican support to pass tax legislation. Sweeping income tax cuts enacted under Bush, who was never elected president but managed to steal two terms in the office, are set to expire at the end of the year. If Congress does not act appropriately, then taxpayers at every income level will be hit with significant tax increases. President Obama and Democratic leaders in Congress want to extend the tax cuts for individuals making less than $200,000 a year and to married couples making less than $250,000 a year. The bill just passed by the House would do that. The vote was 234 to 188. All but 20 Democrats voted in favor of the bill and all but 3 Republicans opposed it. The White House is pressing Congress to extend jobless benefits and other tax credits enacted as part of President Obama's massive economic recovery package. However, as long as Republicans are able to create their roadblocks, we of the middle class are likely to remain economically distressed for a long time. Jason?
Got that right. Bucking a global trend, leftist-led Bolivia is lowering its retirement age and nationalizing its pension funds. Bolivia's Congress approved legislation early Friday to make Bolivians eligible for full pensions at age 58. The country's 70,000 miners will get to retire 2 years earlier. The previous retirement age was 65 for men and 60 for women. Bolivia's decision to lower its retirement age runs counter to a global trend to raise retirement ages as life expectancies rise, birth rates drop, and national treasuries come under strain from pension obligations. France raised its minimum retirement age to 62 last month. Full benefits aren't available now until 67, while Greece is drastically cutting back early retirement opportunities. President Evo Morales had pushed hard for the pension reform law, which also brings the landlocked Andean nation's pension system under state control and extends pension protections to the 60% of Bolivians who work in the informal sector and currently lack pensions. Morales is expected to sign the law, which is scheduled to take effect in mid-2011. Bolivia's Federation of Private Employers opposed the law, expressing skepticism the new system would be sustainable. 13 years ago, Bolivia privatized its pension funds after a state-run system collapsed. The country's two privately run pension funds, covering 1.2 million workers and run by Zurich Financial Services and the BBVA Bank, will now revert to state control. The law creates a solidarity fund into which workers and companies will pay. It will provide minimal pensions to informal sector workers who make voluntary contributions of their own for 10 years. Bob?
Okay. Hundreds of angry Pratt & Whitney workers rallied this week outside the company's East Hartford, Connecticut plant before marching on the company headquarters, blasting the air with strike whistles and chants of "Don't screw with 22." The slogan refers to the job security provisions in the IAM Pratt contract embodied in Letter 22. The letter commits the company to make every reasonable effort to preserve work in Connecticut rather than shipping it elsewhere. IAM members paid dearly for that language, accepting more than $32 million in concessions in exchange for the job security provisions. The protections have proved their worth. Twice in the last decade, the IAM successfully sued Pratt in federal court and obtained injunctions preventing hundreds of jobs from being outsourced. Contract negotiations are now underway with a deadline of December 5th. Management at Pratt is seeking to gut Letter 22 and close its Cheshire and Cairo East Hartford operations, eliminating 500 hourly jobs. Speaker after speaker at the East Hartford rally condemned Pratt executives for abandoning dedicated workers and the United States, even while the U.S. government remains Pratt's biggest customer, as Connecticut Local 1746 President Juan Gelabart told the crowd, "These people would sell their mother's soul for an extra buck. They should be ashamed of what they're trying to do, sending military work to Singapore and Japan." Tom?
Hey, a little upbeat news here. Folks who are looking for real Christmas trees can choose from three kinds of evergreens during a 49-hour sale this weekend. The Illini Foresters, a student organization at the University of Illinois, is selling trees. Sales started at 2 o'clock p.m. yesterday and will continue until 3 o'clock p.m. tomorrow, Sunday, at the Illini Plantations, a lot south of the intersection of Race Street and Windsor Road in Urbana. The more than 30-year tradition finds club members camping out at the site during the night and day sales, so you can get a tree any time of the night or day. White and Scotch pines start at $25 for a 5-foot tree and go up $5 per foot. Balsam fir trees are starting at $35 for a 5-foot tree and go up $5 per foot beyond that. The organization will be using the proceeds from the sales to send its members for training to become certified wildland firefighters. Jason?
U.S. Steel is trying to drive a wedge between generations of workers, locking out steel workers in Hamilton, Ontario, when union negotiators would not take a deal that sold out past and future workers. Steelworkers Local 1005 refused to bring a contract back to its 900 members that would have ended cost-of-living increases for 9,000 pensioners and dumped future workers into a shaky 401k-style retirement plan. Current workers, meanwhile, were presented with a deal that would weaken their supplemental unemployment benefit, a key to survival for workers who have been idled for much of the last 2 years as steel demand dwindled. At the last minute, the company backed down on concessions aimed at current workers, trying to convince them to forget about others. U.S. Steel is attempting to make coke, but not steel, currently with salaried employees. Salaried workers are locked inside the plant, sleeping on cots. They won't be allowed out for weeks. Union leaders are confident some won't come back and production will continue to suffer. That could give the union the upper hand if members can hang on long enough to wear the company down. A generational gap caused by years of little hiring is chafing at union solidarity. For about half the workforce is over 50, and about another third is under 40. Many of the younger workers came into the plant in recent years as the company prepared for a wave of retirements. Bob?
Okay, the AFL-CIO Industrial Union Council Director, Bob Bowe, is a member of a global union delegation led by the International Trade Union Confederation, ITUC, attending the new round of United Nations climate change negotiations in Cancun, Mexico. After the acrimonious climate change talks in Copenhagen last December and in Bonn last June, delegates to the 16th meeting of the Committee of the Parties come to the table in Cancun with reduced expectations. The delegates hope that these climate talks will result in specific decisions that can serve as stepping stones for the next major meeting on climate change in Johannesburg, South Africa in 2012. In particular, the global union members here in Cancun are focusing on making sure our just transition ideals are included in a final global climate change treaty. A just transition to a green economy means workers would have the right to a voice in their workplace, the freedom to form unions and bargain collectively, and access to training on the latest technology. Since December 2009, affiliates of the AFL-CIO and the unions of the ITUC have been lobbying their respective governments to build off these areas of agreement they reached in Copenhagen. Their goal in Cancun now is to make sure that the delegates take the next step and decide to include the agreed-on just transition language in the treaty and the sections related to implementations as well. And I think we're going to go to some music here. Bill found a Rolling Stones song. Bill had some comments on that song.
Oh, yeah, folks. That was Rolling Stones. First time ever played. The Rolling Stones, the first time ever played on the Illinois World Labor Hour. And and that's amazing because they are one of my favorite bands. And that song is, I've known a lot of factory girls and construction worker girls and such over the years. And anyway, they do some other really good working class songs, but there was a problem. They crossed some picket line in the 1980s, I believe, in Paris, France. I can't remember the exact story, but I researched it several years ago. And so we're going to feature them and also things by John Lennon and Paul McCartney, since there's a big re-release of their work and a lot of Beatles stuff coming out right now. So we'll have a couple of songs by them, too. And someday we will bring back Bruce Springsteen and forgive him for the Tacoma, Washington incident back in the 80s. I think he's done enough. And by the way, our real longtime listeners may remember that the original theme song for the Illinois, or at that time it was the East Central Illinois Labor Journal.
That's what we started out as?
Yes. And Badlands. Peter Miller picked Badlands by Bruce Springsteen, which kind of mystified me because none of the working class people that I'd ever spent much time with ever listened to Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. No.
It was mainly college people listened to Bruce Springsteen,
yeah.
Even though I was a great fan of his. And finally on that, we had to ban Bruce Springsteen at one point because very early on in the program, we had a guest, a young man who's was the president of a chemical workers union local in Lamont, Illinois, and they had been locked out by the, at that time, the evil Venezuelans that ran the PDVSA and Citgo. He worked at a refinery there, and they were being locked out at that time. And he didn't like it because he knew about the Tacoma, Washington incident, and he complained to us, so we dropped all Bruce Springsteen.
There you go.
But we will bring him back. But he's
back.
He's done enough.
All right. How about a little bit of Hightower Radio News? His story for today is the redistribution of America's wealth to the few.
America's unemployed and downsized workers are furious that corporate profits, stock prices, and CEO pay are up while hiring and wages are held down. But wait, U.S. corporations actually are increasing their payrolls, just not in America. In a two-year period, these corporate giants hiked hiring in foreign countries by 729,000 jobs, even as they cut 500,000 jobs here. Hilton Hotels, for example, moved a U.S. call center to the Philippines, calling it a move for maximizing efficiencies, which is cold corporate jargon for chasing cheap labor. Likewise, J.P. Morgan Chase, which hauled in $25 billion from the Wall Street bailout, is moving its telephone banking business from Troy, Michigan, to the Philippines. Dell, the computer peddler, has closed its last PC factory here while creating tens of thousands of PC jobs in China. And get this, Hewlett-Packard has dumped its human resources staff in 10 states, moving the work to Panama. Hello? Human resources is the corporate division that ostensibly helps resolve worker complaints and boost employee morale. So the message here is, hey, bud, got a problem? Take it to Panama. Yet, a clueless Harvard business professor recently poo-pooed any concerns about this outflow of American jobs. When companies succeed abroad, he asserted, people at home succeed. Golly, professor, I can hardly wait for you to enjoy the success of seeing your job offshore to some orangutans in Malaysia. This is Jim Hightower saying, bear in mind that replacing American employees with low-wage foreigners does nothing to improve products or even make them cheaper. The savings on wage costs are simply pocketed by corporate executives and Wall Street financiers. It's a massive redistribution of wealth from the many to the few. And the moneyed elites wonder why workaday Americans are furious?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
And we're back, WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and streaming live at weft.org. And as Hightower would say, swim against the current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. So it's about halfway through the show, and should be time for Tom's poem again. And this week, Tom's poem is entitled Banker's Tricks.
One time we had security in our so-called land of the free, but soon security won't be. They're stealing it from you and me. One recent treachery we hear that's coming to us from D.C. They want to work you till you die with no Social Security. They say they want to raise the age for when a worker can retire, caring not of a worker's health, whether it be good or dire. What the whole drama amounts to is that thieves are plying their trade. Bankers who own politicians are the only ones who'll be paid. One promise we all were born with right here in this land of the free is that we would be rewarded for fulfilling our destiny. We could work for most of our lives doing just what we chose to do, and we would get what we deserve that day our working days are through. Now that's a dream in a bullseye for trigger-happy politics, and our dreams become a victim of lying, cheating bankers' tricks. Write to your representative and write to your senator, too. Tell them ending security is the stupidest thing they could do. Banker's Tricks was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on December 1st, 2010 and was first recited live December 4th, 2010 here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
All right, thanks, Tom. Good poem as usual.
Thank you.
And I want to remind you that you can watch Labor's View TV program every Sunday at 4 p.m. on local cable channel 6. And that's hosted by our other co-host, David Johnson, and our friend, Jim Iman, every Sunday, 4 o'clock on cable channel 6. And I got a public service announcement for you here. On Sunday, December 5th, between 2 and 3 p.m., you can come hear Americana Rhythms, the songs of Woody Guthrie. That's going to be with Bucky Hulker at the Champaign Public Library. You can join Bucky Hulker as he presents working-class protest songs from the Dust Bowl and Great Depression in a program of performance and commentary. Hulker is a scholar, labor songster, and rabble-rouser, and serves on the board of directors for the Woody Guthrie Foundation and Archives in New York City. The Americana Rhythms series is sponsored by the Library Friends. Champaign Public Library is at 200 West Green Street on the corner of Green and Randolph. And that's tomorrow, Sunday, December 5th, between 2 and 3 p.m.
Bill? Hey, wow, I might have to head back into town. I haven't seen Bucky for a while.
I'm planning on being there myself tomorrow, Bill. He is a labor songster and rabble-rouser.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't think I've seen him since 2001 when he just happened to be playing in the labor pavilion at the Illinois State Fair when I was there. The last time I was there. Same day, I also saw Bob Dylan. But
oh, really?
Yeah, that was a different show. More lasers.
Yeah, yeah. But Bucky's really good.
And yeah,
he's doing this whole thing on songs of Woody Guthrie right now.
Yeah, I've seen him perform probably two or three times, and we've got CDs here by him.
Yeah, course. We do. And did you ever have him on the show, Bill?
I don't know if we've ever had him on the show or not. I'm not. I think the last time I remember him being in Champaign was several years ago. Perhaps it was the Milton Derber lecture. And I'm not sure if he performed there or what. And it might have been the one where Richard Trumka was there.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. It's been a long time and many drinks.
Yes, I know that.
Oh, well, maybe I should play Picasso's Last Words instead of Richard Corey. Speaking of that, you know, drink to my health.
Tom, you got a public service announcement over there?
Yeah, on Monday, December 6th at 6 p.m., there will be a potluck with a discussion following at 7 p.m., hosted by the St. Jude Catholic Worker House at 317 South Randolph Street in Champaign, as a part of a series of potlucks on the first Monday of the month. At the December potluck, there will be an animated short film, Money as Debt, that gives the history of currency, banking, and our government's fractional reserve system, which may allow the creation of money through citizens' debt. That's the St. Jude Catholic Worker House at 6 p.m. on Monday.
Excellent. Thanks. And I think we're going to go to this John Lennon song and try that out.
No, actually, this is Wings Live Over America, and you might be really surprised, but Paul McCartney is one of my favorites, even though silly love songs is pretty bad, a lot of things like that. But he's done some really great stuff, and this particular live album, it gathers a lot, I mean, my favorite stuff by him anyway, and puts it all in a real nice package, and it's performed excellently live. And this is actually an old Simon and Garfunkel song called Richard Corey.
Oh,
Richard
really?
Corey, the wealthy factory owner.
Yeah. No.
Just stop playing?
No. There we go.
Let me start this over, folks. I forgot. I had my...
Please go.
I had my headphones plugged in to the jack I needed the board plugged into.
There you go, Bob.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Richard Corey wants one half of this old town with political connections.
spreads his wealth around. He was born into society, a banker's only child. He had everything a man could want, money, presents, style. The papers print his picture almost every place he goes. Richard Corey at the opera, Richard Corey at the shows, and the rumor of his parties and the orgies on his yacht. He really must be happy with everything he's got. But I work in his factory, curse the life I'm living, Lord, it's my poverty. Wish that I could be, wish that I could be. Oh, I wish that I could be John Denver. Hold on, yeah, I can't wait. He really gave to the charities, had the common touch. They were thankful for his patronage, so they thank you very much. So the mob would feel with wonder when the evening headline read, Richard Corey went home last night and put a bullet through his head. But I'm working his factory, life I'm living, curse my poverty. I wish that I could be, I wish that I could be. Oh, I wish that I could be Richard Corey.
Right, and that was Paul McCartney, Bill, doing Richard Corey.
That's true. It's a really good song, originally written by Simon and Garfunkel. And, you know, of course, it's right in that great folk tradition of people's music, of working class music, of a story like Woody Guthrie, you know, might tell. But it's a really good one. I mean, I work in your factory. I hate the life I live in. I curse my poverty, you know.
Yeah.
And the wastrel Richard Corey, the parties on his yacht.
Yeah.
And we've seen that. There's been a spate of articles lately, and this is kind of getting away from what I originally started talking about, but I think it all ties in. Now the wealthy are consuming again.
Yeah.
Things are better. The wealthy are consuming again.
Tiffany's doing real well, man. Yes. They're selling tons of stuff out there. People are buying massive motorhomes and stuff and big yachts again.
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll be hearing about some major, really bizarre corporate parties and things like we did back in the old boom.com Enron days.
Corporations are spending billions of dollars to buy other corporations that don't really do nothing. You got to wonder, you know, where did they get all this money from, you know?
Well, and we won't be wondering where they'll get a whole lot more if this deficit commission ideas, it's not just taking the entire report and voting it up and down in Congress, but I am real disappointed in Dick Durbin. He actually said that report should be basically the basis of the next budget.
Really?
Yes, I believe he said that. I read that the other day, and I am so he voted for it anyway. That's bad enough.
Is he part of the commission?
Yes,
he
was
one
part
of
the commission.
Yeah.
And
Jan Schakowsky is on there too, right?
Yes, she is.
And she voted against it.
Yeah, right? I bet she feels like she just got stabbed. Well, probably not. She probably expected it, but I'm really disappointed in Dick Durbin. I thought he wasn't quite a Feingold or something,
yeah,
or a Sanders or what, but But he's usually been a pretty good square guy, and I've been real disappointed with that. And I tell you what, I mean, what, they wanted to lower it down to like a 23% flat tax rate where they would cut back or cut off all the deductions. And I believed on News from Neptune, the previous program, they were playing Doug Henwood's Left Business Observer, and he was talking about how that would enrich like the top, the upper 1%. And might give, I guess he thought he'd give a little haircut, though, to the top 0.3%, I believe he said. But it would stab the rest of us in the back on down the line. It's a flat tax is basically really a regressive tax. And I do know that the income tax deduction system has been severely abused. And if you want to find out about that, you should read a book called Perfectly Legal by David K. Johnston. And there's several other books probably written by this. I imagine Kevin Phillips has hit this pretty good at one point or another, and William Grider, among others, at least in articles. But it is, I mean, the income tax system, yes, it is to redistribute wealth. That is true. That is the entire intent of the income tax system.
Exactly.
That is the intent of the inheritance tax. That was the intent, if we're going to get all righteous about this, that was the intent of the and founding fathers.
Yeah.
They did not want a aristocracy any more than they wanted a standing army. And but what have we happened? We've got the old rich. We've had the aristocracy, and it wasn't that many generations, maybe two generations after the founding fathers. You know, the Rockefellers.
Yeah.
How much have they been hurt by all the various panics and bank runs and recessions and flapdoodles or whatever kind of economic thing happened?
Not a whole lot since it was them running the banks.
Well, yeah, I mean, all it was for them, for people like them, the Vanderbilts, the...
Nowadays, the Walmarts.
And as the people Aspers. Who I actually have a slight distant personal connection to the big bankers out of some people I know them. It's really bizarre.
Really?
The Mellon family.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you know, all these things are for them are opportunities for them to buy assets cheap.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's evidence. Some people think that they actually engineer these things. You know, I haven't delved that deeply into it, but it might be an interesting area of study. And but basically, this deficit reduction deal, it's just, you know, they're going to try any way at all to cram somehow all of this stuff down our throats, man. And I am really disappointed, too, that Richard Durbin did not stand with one of his fellow Illinois delegation members to the Congress, and that is Jan Schakowsky. She is a woman who has always impressed me.
Yep.
In fact, I've seen her lead approximately 15,000 union members singing Solidarity, well, trying to sing Solidarity Forever because nobody ever knows the words, in front of the State House in Springfield.
Yeah.
You know, back in 1996 when we had a big panic because Republicans won a whole bunch of stuff. And then, you know, we got out, man. I mean, it was an amazing thing. We should have been having that the last 2 years, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Jan Schakowsky came out with a progressive alternative. I've not read it in any detail, but I will trust Jan Schakowsky to have come out with something at least much better than what this committee deal is. I don't know. Anybody else have any ideas on that or how it's being presented to us? And
pretty much it's being presented as take it or leave it, you know. And why can't you understand that this is good for you guys,
we gotta
you
wait
know?
2 years for another election.
Yeah, the tough medicine that we guarantee you that you need. I think it's pretty disgraceful. I think people obviously should be more than a little skeptical about simplifying the tax code through lowering it for the wealthiest people as if that would solve and these issues of loopholes. I'm also a bit appalled that it really hasn't taken on in any full frontal way the gross amount of corporate tax loopholes that there are. I mean, It was a study that Citizen for Tax Justice did, I think it was about 6 years ago, that in the first 3 years of the Bush administration, you had over 80 major corporations, American corporations, that were all profitable, did not pay taxes for either one, two, or all 3 years between 2001 and 2003. I mean, you're looking at $250 billion a year just from that alone, not even counting what you could be looking at with actually increasing taxes on wealthy people. Why is this actually...
I don't think that's changed much either in the last 5 years of the Bush administration or the first 2 years of the Obama administration. Sure. Corporations pay very few taxes in many respects.
Yeah, the real corporate tax rate is one of the lower in the industrialized world in spite of the powers that be whining about what the paper tax rate is for them.
Hey, I want to ask somebody. Okay, now this whole big deal that comes out about, our grandchildren are going to be paying for that. Gee, I guess I'm glad I'm not a breeder. Then they won't have to do that. But anyway, I don't know. Am I paying for World War II right now? Huh?
Korean War? Or maybe we're still paying for the Vietnam War?
The interstate highway system, am I still paying for that? Was that the big burden on me, or is the big burden on me the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and the bailouts and everything else,
Good question, Bill.
Is it like there's never going to be anything change over the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, two generations? Is there no way that anything could be looked at as an investment, a turnaround? Do you realize that 1947, I believe it was the highest time when we had the highest debt in comparison to the gross domestic product ever? It was even after World War II. And I bet that was a part of that was the Marshall Plan, possibly, where we were helping out all these people in other countries.
Yeah, a lot of money went to Europe and Japan both.
But guess what? A lot of that money came back to Caterpillar and probably Republic Steel and Bethlehem Steel because we were the only nation left standing. It was an investment, and look what it's done. And right now, we could get a lot of that investment back because we did so well then that the Europeans can stand on their own and they don't need our troops there. That's one thing we could do. But, we don't have anything jobs for them here anyway.
Big businesses bankers were actually the ones administering it. They were the heads of all the different departments far as for industries and banking and were the ones who were... administering it and whose businesses benefited from all this.
Yeah, and I believe that right now, I haven't looked at it lately, we're somewhere close to 1-to-1 with our gross domestic product compared to our annual gross domestic product, folks, which is, I believe, around $15 trillion right now. That's where we're close to 1-to-1 with that, with the debt.
Yeah.
Well, do you think... I remember in the 1960s, it didn't seem like anybody was complaining about paying for World War II. I don't remember my parents talking about that or anybody else. Do you think there's going to be people complaining about fixing the economy of this country and investing in a future by rebuilding our several most important infrastructures of energy, transportation, communication, education, healthcare? Which doesn't end with a shh like the other ones do. But I don't think... Do you think your grandchildren are going to be really upset because you left them with a fantastic high-speed rail system and a great high-speed communication backbone?
Right.
And links out to their houses out in the country and, I don't know, maybe our new space colonies or whatever, folks. It takes money to make money.
We're falling behind everybody, even in green technologies. China's beating us with solar panels and wind turbine. Vestas Energy out of Netherlands and stuff. They're all beating us in everything we should be working on.
Well, and let's say you're a small business person. You have to borrow $100,000 to start your business. Well... It's likely your revenues are going to be less than that every year for a while.
Yeah.
But at some point, you will. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just what business does. It's not spending. Expenses are for expendable items. What we're talking about is investment. You know, and if done correctly, and that goes back to the what I was starting to talk about a little bit with the tax plans and such, because tax deductions can be very pro-social things. That was the original intent. You got a tax deduction because you did something that helped other people in the United States. You get a tax deduction for charitable things because it takes the place of a charity. You get a tax deduction for starting a business in the United States and having business expenses in the United States because it's supposed to help create jobs and blah, blah, blah. You know, but if you start looking at books like Perfectly Legal and so on, you will see how that has been gerrymandered, or not gerrymandered, but rigged for certain particular people, businesses, and industries.
I just want to comment on one more deduction that they're giving us, and that's for creating the new workers. You know, kids, there are deductions on your tax return. Hey, you've created a new worker.
Well, that's true, too, and... Anyway, I don't know. That's just me about taxes. I don't like paying taxes, but I mean, it's how we get things done, and it's where a lot of my income comes from, is tax paid for work.
We're going to go to that Bernie Sanders clip?
Yeah, we can. It might be about time. I've been flatulating verbally too much here. Folks, here's Bernie Sanders. This thing's been all over the internet. It's really popular. He's really getting down in Congress.
With the issue of what we do with the Bush tax cuts of 2001 and 2003. And if you can believe it, we have people here, many of my Republican colleagues, who tell us, oh, I am so concerned about our record-breaking deficit. I am terribly concerned about a $13.7 trillion national debt. Terribly concerned about the debt that we're going to be leaving to our kids and our grandchildren. But wait a minute. It's very important that we give over a 10-year period $700 billion in tax breaks to the top 2%. Oh, yeah, we're concerned about the debt. We're concerned about the deficit. But we are more concerned that millionaires, people who earn at least $1 million a year or more, get on average $100,000 a year in tax breaks. So you got a $13.7 trillion national debt growing. You've got growing income inequality, top 1%, earning more income than the bottom 50%. But the highest priority of many of my Republican colleagues is to make sure that millionaires and billionaires get more tax breaks. I think that that is absurd. But it is not only income tax rates that we're dealing with. It is the estate tax as well. And let's be clear, while some of my friends want to eliminate completely the estate tax, which has been in existence in this country since 1916, let us be clear that every nickel of benefit, all of those benefits, will go to the top 0.3%. And if we did, as some of my friends would like, eliminate the estate tax completely, it would cost us $1 trillion in revenue over a 10-year period, all of the benefits going to the top 0.3%. So I am sure that in a little while, my friends are going to come down to the floor and say, we're very concerned about the deficit. We're very concerned about the national debt. But you know what we're more concerned about? Giving huge tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country. But, Mr. President, the tax issue is just one part of what some of our wealthy friends want to see happen in this country. The reality is that many of these folks want to bring the United States back to where we were in the 1920s. And they want to do their best to eliminate all traces of social legislation which working families fought tooth and nail to develop to bring a modicum of stability and security to their lives. There are people out there, not all, but there are some who want to privatize or completely eliminate Social Security. They want to privatize or cut back substantially on Medicare. Yeah, you're 75 years of age and you have no money, good luck to you getting your health insurance at an affordable cost from a private insurance company. I am just sure there are all kinds of private insurance companies out there just delighted to take care of low-income seniors who are struggling with cancer or another disease. Mr. President, furthermore, there are corporate leaders out there and many members of Congress who not only want to continue, they want to expand our disastrous trade policies. My wife and I went shopping the other day, started our Christmas shopping. And we looked and we looked, and virtually every product that was out there in the store, consumer products, was China, China, and China. We seem to be a country in which we have a 51st state named China, which is producing virtually all of the products that we as Americans consume. Our trade policy has resulted in the loss of millions of good-paying jobs, as large corporations and CEOs have said, why do I want to reinvest in America when I can go to countries where people are paid 50 cents, 75 cents an hour? That's what I'm going to do, to heck with the working people of this country. So not only are we saddled with this disastrous trade policy, there are people who actually want to expand it. Now, one of the things that we're going to see going on is that while we struggle with a record-breaking deficit and a large national debt caused by the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, caused by tax breaks for the wealthy, caused by an unpaid-for Medicare Part D prescription drug program, caused by the Wall Street bailout, driving up the deficit, driving up the national debt, that some people can say, oh, my goodness, we got all of those expenses, and then we got to give tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, but we want to balance the budget. Gee, how are we going to do that? Well, obviously, we know how they're going to do that. We're going to cut back on health care. We're going to cut back on education. We're going to cut back on child care. We're going to cut back on Pell programs. We just don't have enough money for working families and their needs. We're going to cut back on food stamps. We're surely not going to expand unemployment compensation. We got a higher priority, Mr. President. We have got to give tax breaks to billionaires. I mean, that's what this whole place is about, isn't it? They fund the campaigns. They get what's due them. Mr. President, amazingly enough, we have our friends on Wall Street, the CEOs of the large financial institutions. They want to rescind or slow down many of the provisions, the very modest provisions in the financial reform bill. I voted for the financial reform bill, but I will tell you clearly it did not go anywhere near far enough, but it went too far for our Wall Street friends and their lobbyists who are all over here. And for the hundreds of millions of dollars Wall Street spends on this place, they want to rescind, slow down some of the reforms there. These people want to cut back on the powers of the EPA and the Department of Energy so that ExxonMobil can remain the most profitable corporation in world history while oil and coal companies continue to pollute our air and our water. Last year, ExxonMobil made $19 billion in profit. Guess what? They paid zero in taxes. They got a $156 million refund from the IRS. I guess that's not good enough. We've got to give the oil companies even more tax breaks. So, Mr. President, I think that's where we are. We've got to own up to it. There is a war going on. The middle class is struggling for existence, and they're taking on some of the wealthiest and most powerful forces in the world whose greed has no end. And if we don't begin to stand together and start representing those families, there will not be a middle class in this country. Mr. President, with that, I would yield the floor.
President.
Senator from...
And that was Bernie Sanders. And where did that clip come from, Bill?
Well, I got it from YouTube, but it's labeled here, Mox News, Unfair and Biased. MoxNews.com. So you might be able to find it at Mox News.
Unfair and biased, huh?
Yes.
All right. So we're going to try and close the show out here with this little bit of John Lennon.
Yes, I believe so.